Now, I know we got a big group of people here. We've got students here who are still in school. We've got homemakers, stay-at-home moms here who are raising kids and building a family and providing a place from which God can do amazing things through your family dynamic. We have people here that are wanting to be employed, that were employed. We got people looking for jobs. We got everybody across the board. But the principles of today apply actually to all of us in the room right now. And if you are working, and we assumed last week a 75-year average life, and so all the numbers we were using were based on that. But if you worked a 40-hour week on average from 25 years old up until 65 or 67 years old, you're going to spend 10 years, 10 solid years of your life working. You're like, no, Louis, I worked from like when I was 14 years old all the way up to I'm still working. I've worked more than 10 years. No, not 10 years on a calendar, 10 solid years of the time you have on earth you will spend at your job. You're like, man, that doesn't sound like a lot. It felt like I spent 10 years at my job this week. And so I don't know, maybe it's more than that in my field of work. Most of us aren't working 40-hour work weeks. A lot of you are working more than 40 hours. Some of you have more than one job. And if you're working something closer to a 50-hour work week, we're talking about 12, 13, 14, 15 years of time on earth spent at our work. So how do we not waste our work? How do we make sure that those 10 years, solid years, those 15 years of time that we have on earth don't just get flushed down the toilet and we get a paycheck every 2 weeks and that was all it was? We do that by asking, how do I leverage my work for what matters most? You know, when we say work, that we start thinking, Monday morning, the work week, the commute, the office, the projects, the deadlines. We think work typically is a part of the broken part of the world. We work because we live in a sinful world and that's just part of it. But do you realize work was a part of the perfect world that God created? So when Adam and Eve entered into paradise, it says in Genesis 2:15, the Lord God took the man, put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and keep it. So we're not working because the world's broken. Man was working before sin entered into the story. Why? Because God is a God of creation, and in creation, God has given each of us a stewardship of opportunity. And even in the very first days, in a perfect world, no sin, no death, no sickness, no sorrow, paradise on planet Earth, Adam had a responsibility, a stewardship, something to wake up and look forward to, a contribution to be made in God's world. That's how God saw work in a perfect world, and that's how God sees work in an imperfect world. It's our opportunity to wake up in the morning, to live with purpose, and to make a contribution to God's world. Often that's not how you see work, and it's not how I see work. So the question really today is, how do you see work? More specifically, how do you see your work? And I think it's one of two ways. It's either, I think about my job, Louie, and I think about that cubicle I go to. Does anybody actually work in a cubicle anymore? Are there still cubicles? Okay, see, we got some people going to a cubicle. You're like, no, I don't even have a cubicle yet, Louie. I'm working my way up to a cubicle. But some people see going to work as a prison. I see work, my work as a prison. It's like, man, the warden comes by when I get there and lets me in, and I go in, and then they close the little gate behind me, and they stand there until break time and say, okay, you got 10 minutes, and I'll be right here after 10 minutes, get back in there, and then we get 30 minutes for lunch, and they let you out or encourage you to eat at your desk so you can be more productive, and then at the end of the day, if everything goes well, somewhere around 5, 5.15, 5.30, 6.30, the warden comes back by and says, well, you're going to get to go home. And then we internalize that, and we're like, man, we say things like this all the time. If I can get done with this project, I can what? I can get out of here. Man, I cannot wait till Friday so that I can get out of here. We're talking to a friend on the phone. I don't know. I'm trying to wrap this up right now. And if I can wrap it up, I'm wrapping it up as fast as I can so that I can get out of here. The mentality is I'm stuck in this job, stuck in this company, stuck in this cubicle, stuck in this dead-end environment. And it feels like a prison. And what God is wanting to say today, it's not a prison. It's actually a platform from which you can influence the entire world. You're like, oh, Louis, there you go again. I encourage you, Louis, one day to not come to work and pray and go up to the ivory tower and memorize scripture and whatever you all do around here all day long. I encourage you to come to my place of work with me tomorrow. And you will say, wow, this is a maximum security prison. No. If I come to work with you tomorrow, what I'm going to say to you is that you have the opportunity, because you are an extraordinary person, A, and you have, on top of that, the abundant opportunity, because you're a daughter or a son of God, to influence the world from the platform of your place of work. This is what Paul gets at in Colossians chapter 3. Look at this main text with me. He says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart. Now, that's one of those texts that you're like, okay, that's very broad and all-inclusive. You could be in the quick food service industry. You could be a bond trader. You could be a stay-at-home mom. You could actually be a student, or you could be in the process of looking for work. All of that fits under the header, whatever you do. Do it with all your heart. Now, can we back up and give some context here? The people that Paul is writing to in this passage, a lot of them are working in jobs not of their choosing. They're in situations of employment that none of us would want to be in. But what Paul is saying is, in the kingdom economy of God, your job doesn't control how you influence the world. You can use your job to determine how you influence the world. And you do that by seeing the principle that is in this text. Whatever you do, can you just say that with me? Whatever you do, can you say that? Whatever you do. So that's all of us. So you're like, well, you don't know what I do. Doesn't matter what you do, whatever you do. Work at it. So there's the word. I know we don't love it, but there it is. It doesn't say try. It says work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord. So this is where it starts to change. So it's not just your boss, just your company, just the paycheck, just yourself. We're actually doing this for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you'll receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. So there's a payoff at the end of this job. Can we just celebrate that today? There is a payoff for you at the end of your workday tomorrow. There is a payoff coming for you at the end of your workday tomorrow. Boss might not walk in. Shareholders may not walk in. You may not get a big bonus check added to your direct deposit this next pay period, but there is a reward coming for you at the end of the day tomorrow. And then he goes and explains even more. He says, it is the Lord Christ that you serve. This is a revolutionary way of looking at work. This is opposite of the world's way of looking at work. And this is all of a sudden understanding that this job can become a platform of influence where God can launch rockets for his glory. That's what this thing I go to every day can be if I see it the way God sees it and not the way sometimes men want to see it. So what's going to be the big idea for today? Let's put that out there first, and then we'll work our way from that into some practical application that we can all put into practice starting immediately in our work environment. The big idea is, how do you not waste your work? You don't waste your work by excelling at what you do with a winsome spirit. You don't waste your work by excelling at what you do with a winsome kingdom spirit. Now, what does that mean? Let's break that down a little bit today. We're talking about a cubicle, and I was thinking about the cubicle, and the cubicle has six sides. And so we're going to ask six big questions about how to not waste our work. And the first question that we're going to ask is, what more can I give? Now, this is a different question than a lot of people are asking, and that's why I believe a lot of people are wasting the 10 to 15 years of their life that they spend at their work, because they're not asking the right question. And the right question isn't, what can I get out of this job? The right question is, what more can I give in this job? Thank you. I feel like now people feel obligated to amen, but that's the only one I got all day at that point. So millennials, any millennials in the house? Amazing. What they say about millennials, which, you know, you got to take all this with a grain of salt, because no one person's the same as the other person. But most millennials will have four jobs before they're 30 years old. The next generation after the millennials will have five jobs before they're 30 years old. The last generation before the millennials had three jobs. So I see a trend developing. Each generation that's coming, there's a lot more turnover happening in the job world. The average person in their full work life will work in seven different careers. Now, that may not be true. Some of you here are like, Louie, I've been in the same job doing the same thing for 30 years. That's great. That's not normal. So seven careers in a whole lifespan, or it's not average, it's normal, it's just not average. A millennial, four jobs before you're 30, what does that mean? It means that in the workplace, it's possible, just stay with me for a minute, that the primary driver of the worker is there another better job out there for me? Oh, I'm happy to work here. I like these people. I like this place. I like what they've done for me. I'm happy that they employed me. But I'm always thinking, is there another option for me? Here's what was really interesting about the study of the millennials with the four jobs. In those four jobs, each time a millennial changed jobs, they got a 10-plus percent salary bump for moving from this company to that company. But if they stay at the same company the whole 10 years, you're probably only getting the standard 3 to 4% cost of living increase every year. So why do I want 3 to 4% a year if I can work here 2 years and then get 10 to 15% by going to our other company down the street and then do that again and do that and do that and do that? And when we think that way, we're thinking, how can I benefit most from this job? And I want to offer that if you spend your entire 10 to 15 year work life doing that, there is a really high chance you're going to waste your work. You will have more money at the end of the day that you made, but that does not ensure that the 15 years that you paid to get it is really going to count for the things that matter most. So how do we shift the landscape? We ask these kinds of questions. How can I exceed expectations? We're not waiting for someone to ask us that. We're asking the question of ourselves and of the people we work around. We ask the question, how can I add more than I'm adding now? You're like, Louie, I can't add anymore. I promise you can add more. If you don't spend time on social media on your work time, you can add more. And if you don't spend time on social media on your work time, that means you don't have social media, so good for you. But if you have social media and you've never looked at your Facebook page while you were at work, congratulations. We have a Hall of Sainthood that we're opening down at the end of the building, and you can be the first inductee today. Just go down there, give them your name, and we'll put your portrait up on the wall. That's a way that the average millennial worker can add 2 hours to their workday. By not answering personal email, clicking on the ad on the side of the thing they were looking at for their company, checking their Facebook, scrolling through Instagram, texting a friend about something unrelated to work, you can gain back 2 hours in your workday. There's always room to add more than what you're adding if you're looking for the opportunity and asking the question, what more can I give? How can I make the life and the mission easier for those who paved the way for me to be here? This is a different way of thinking.
It's deciding you want to be the most indispensable person in your organization, not the most disposable person in your organization. And when you change your mindset, simply change your mindset like that, you are turning your prison in that moment into a platform. And you're beginning to see things differently when you show up at your job tomorrow. Second question we're asking is, what more can I learn? What does that mean? It means simply that we see those 10 to 15 years as a continuing education opportunity where we can improve our thinking and our knowledge base in life. We can take advantage of this opportunity, not just for our own personal growth, but in our own personal growth to be able to contribute more to the common good. How do you do that? You take initiative. Can we just say that one more time? You take initiative. You take initiative. You don't wait until you're asked. You take initiative. You motivate yourself. You come through the door in the morning saying, I want to learn something today. I want to try something today. I want to get involved with something. I want to stretch a little bit today. I don't want to just do whatever's put right in front of me. You ask questions. You take advantage of every training opportunity that comes along. You do outside research. You look to learn about things that are outside your specific lane in the corporation. You make others look good by the research that you do. And then when they look good, you just let them look good. You don't tell everybody at the lunchroom that you're the one who made them look good. You add value to the people that you're working for. If your boss is going to Cleveland on Thursday, then you figure out how to do a one sheet on Cleveland and give your boss seven things he or she needs to know about the business environment related to your company in Cleveland that maybe they already know or maybe they don't know. It was unsolicited. You just say, this might or might not be helpful to you, but I spent a little extra time and figured out this, this, and this. And they might look at you and say, thank you, but that doesn't help me. Or they might actually say thank you and then go to the meeting when they get to Cleveland and come off a whole lot better than they would have without that information. And they might thank you, they might not thank you, they might take all the credit, they might give you the credit, but you got the satisfaction of learning something about Cleveland that you didn't know that now you have developed as a person just by simply taking an extra step to try to help the organization and the person that you work for. I don't know if you've seen the movie Hidden Figures. Has anybody seen that film? And the film highlights people who for decades really weren't on the radar of recognition in America, and it centers around a woman named Katherine Johnson. And Katherine Johnson, like a lot of these predominantly African-American women who worked for the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics in the 50s and 60s, they worked doing manual computations of speed, velocity, gravity, and other algorithms that allowed for space flight to happen, and they did it manually at their desks. And there were dozens of them in Langley, Virginia, who were supporting the race to space. And I looked on the NASA official bio of Katherine Johnson, who is portrayed so beautifully in this film. She was born in 1918 in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. Graduated high school at 15 years of age, was a math prodigy, obviously. But this is what it says about her, interestingly, in the context of what we're saying, of whether you see your job as a prison or a platform. She started as one of the women who worked on problems assigned from the engineers in the guidance and control branch. As Johnson worked on the problem, she would ask questions. She didn't want to just do the work. She wanted to know the hows and the whys and the why nots. None of the other women had ever asked questions before. Now, here's a whole group of women all doing the same work, but Katherine Johnson shows up, and she's like, has anybody ever asked this? No, no one ever wanted to know that. Has anybody ever asked this? No, no one ever cared to know that. She says, well, I want to know because I want to ask the question today, what more can I learn? Because I'm going to spend a lot of my life in this place. She was told that women didn't participate in the briefings or attend any of the meetings, and so she asked if there was a law against it. The answer, of course, was no, so Johnson began to attend the briefings. Eventually, she became known as a leader. You see how that works in the workplace? And the men increasingly relied on her. She remembers clearly her experience at the time. She said, the women did what they were told to do. They didn't ask questions or take the task any further. I asked questions. I wanted to know why. They got used to me asking the questions and being the only woman there. It was this inquisitive nature that made her a valuable resource to the team and the only woman at the time ever to be pulled from the computing pool to work on other programs. In 1962, when President John F. Kennedy charged the country to send a man to the moon, Johnson became a part of the team. And she began to work on calculating the trajectory for America's first space trip with Alan Shepard's 1961 mission, an early step toward a moon landing. She went on to do the calculations for the first actual moon landing in 1969. Why? Because she asked, what more can I learn? The third way we ensure that we don't waste our work is by asking a third question, and that question is, how can I personally advance the organizational vision? How can what I do at my desk personally contribute to the mission of this organization? Now you're like, Louis, I'm not the boss. I think you're the boss around here, so congratulations. I'm sure that works out great for you, but I'm not the boss. I feel like I'm 100 miles from the vision. Nobody ever asks me in the strategy meetings. I don't go to the board retreats. I'm not there when our quarterly forecasts are made. I just do my job in the company. But if you understand the vision and the mission of your leader and of the company that you work for, the organization that you work for, the school that you're a part of, the community that you're investing your time in, then you can ensure that you don't waste your work. I am the boss, but I haven't always been the boss. I had jobs like every one of us have had in our lifetimes. I spent 2.5 years of my life doing clerical work as a grad assistant at Baylor University, looking in file cabinets almost all day, every day. I've worked for a year at a catering company, serving food and being a coat check guy. I worked underneath the head trainer for the Atlanta Hawks for 3 years while I was in college. Worked at the Centers for Disease Control for 2 years. I painted houses for a year. I was an intern for 4 summers of life. And I know what it's like to be the little guy on the ladder or to have a job that looks like it's a mile away from the vision. But the decision is to override the distance with determination to play my part to contribute to the overall organizational vision and to add what I can to what is happening here. Don't buy the lie simply that you don't have control over much at your work. You may not have control over everything at your work, but don't let that be your mantra. I don't have a say. I don't have any control. Nobody asks me anything. I don't have any pull around here. And that's your story. If that's your story, your major story, you're going to probably end up seeing your work as a prison and not as a platform. So what don't you have control over? You don't have control over what comes in your inbox. Amen. Your boss can just send you something and lo and behold, they do, and then you got to do something. You don't have control over company expectations, so they opened a new branch in Omaha. They didn't ask you whether they were going to do that or not. You don't have control over promotions and recognition, over market conditions, over staff flux, over people friction that you have in the workplace. You don't have control over the fact that, you know, Phyllis is working 3 cubicles down from you, but if you did, she wouldn't be there, but it's not your decision to make. So there are a lot of things you don't have control over, but there's some things, check this out, that you have 100% control over. You're like, huh? Yeah. Number one, your attitude. 100% control over that. Nobody else has control over your attitude. Number two, your joy. See, joy is a powerful tool. And joy isn't related to your location. Like if I could get in that department or get in that office or get with that supervisor, my joy would go up. No, maybe your status in life would go up and improve, your conditions would improve, but joy isn't related to your location. Joy is related to your heart's condition, and your heart can be joyful no matter where you are in the organization, and you can be just as joyless in the corner office as you are in the cubicle you're sitting in right now. So we have 100% control over our attitude, our joy, and our effort. And when we do that, we take ownership of our 4x4 in the organization. We say, whatever comes on this desk, gonna be done well. Whoever comes by this cubicle is gonna see a good attitude. Whoever interacts with me in the course of a given day is gonna know that something different is happening in this world. I'm gonna own this 4x4, I'm gonna care for this 4x4, and I'm gonna make sure whoever the next person that comes in and sits in this 4x4 is gonna find this 4x4 better than I found it when I got here, because I don't run the company, but I do run my cubicle, and I'm gonna make sure my cubicle is the best cubicle in this organization, and nobody can stop me from doing that. And when you see that possibility, you come to work with a different mindset, and you see that you are doing your work for the Lord, not for men, knowing that you're gonna get an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. Fourth question you're gonna ask is, how can I shine? How can I shine? Not just, you know, how can I shine by sharing my faith and my story with Jesus with someone at work, but how can I shine in this company? How can, through my aptitude and my workflow and my character, how can I shine? And this ultimately, how can I shine for Jesus? If I'm going to spend 10 to 15 years of my life at work, I want to make sure I shine for Jesus at work. I want to make sure, as far as I have control, that the light is always on in my cubicle. That there's always a beacon in my cubicle. You need encouragement? You're going to loop by me. You need somebody to pray for you? You're going to loop by me. You need somebody to encourage you in the hardest times in life and celebrate you in the best times of life? You're going to loop by me. If you ever do want to get invited to church, you're going to loop by me. If you ever do decide you have a question about who Jesus is, you're going to loop by me. But here's the thing. Not only am I shining for Jesus, I'm shining as a professional person in my organization. Because your footing of faith, this is so important. Your footing of faith, in other words, how much people want to hear you talk about Jesus, want to hear about Passion City Church, want to know that you're a person of faith, your footing of faith is directly proportional to the way that you care about people and execute your job in your organization. You say, well, what does that mean? It means that someone could say, man, I'm telling you, Bob's getting on my nerves. All he talks about is Jesus. But the person that they're telling it to says, I'm telling you, man, when we went through the hardest patch of our lives, the only person in this organization that stood by me, walked by me, and carried me in those days was Bob. And I don't really agree all together with all of that Jesus business, but I'll tell you one thing. He's the most solid guy you can depend on in this company. We're keeping him around here. Or the other side of it, you know what? I don't really get the Jesus thing either, but I'll tell you one thing, Bob's the best guy we got in this department. Your footing of faith is directly proportional to the way you care about people and to your work product in your organization. If you're inviting people to church, but you're the one sabotaging the deadline of the project that all seven people are working on, they don't want to come to church with you. They want you to get the project done on time, because it ate into their vacation time. It started dominoing their projects into other deadlines, and now their life is underwater because you didn't get your part of the equation done. And then you're like, man, I love Jesus, and I want you to come to church with me. And they're like, no, 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 we don't want to come to church, and we don't want you to go to church. We want you to stay home this Sunday and finish the project that was due on Thursday. But man, if you are consistently being the one that's putting wind in the project, and then you tell people about your life of faith, they're like, I don't know. I don't think I believe in all that, but there must be something going on in your life, right? Because you're crushing it in this organization. And you care for people here like nobody else cares for people. how can I shine today in my organization? I might be the only person shining here. So now I've got a new purpose when I woke up and headed to work today. Two more quick questions. Number five, how can I help? Or who can I help? Who can I help at work today? Work's about projects, but it's mostly about people. And they're all around us. And so if we're rolling into the morning going, man, what have I got to do today? What's in my email today? What am I behind on? What can I push off till tomorrow? How long is it till lunch? If that's all I'm thinking about going through the door, then I'm going to waste that day probably and waste that work. But if I go through the door thinking, God, who can I help today? Who can I influence in a positive way today? It's deciding that you want to be the person in your company that is the most caring, the most trusted, the most respected, the most inviting person on your team. And then you ask a bigger question, not only who can I help right around me, but I'm going to get paid in 2 weeks. Who can I help with the money I'm going to make from this company? And then XYZ Company is helping you help people who need help in the world. How beautiful is that? Todd Peterson was doing the giving a few months ago, and he talked about his friend Orville Rogers, who's 99 years old. And he showed us a picture of him, this incredible Texan who looks iconic in every way. Orville Rogers was a commercial airline pilot, and his total cumulative W-2 earnings in life were $1.5 million. But Orville Rogers has given away to charitable causes in life $35 million. He took his work and he leveraged it into $35 million given to help the last and least of these on planet Earth. You're like, I don't understand that math, Louis. If you got $1.5 million, then you can't give $35 million. You watch God. If you start giving the $1.5 million you're going to make into the kingdom of God, you watch him multiply that into more than you've ever dreamed that you would have in your life. So if it's all about the work just gets the money in my account, then you're going to probably end up wasting a lot of your work. But if it's about the money goes in my account, and then some of the money that goes in my account goes into other people's account, and I am using this platform to get ahead in my job, and when I see bonuses coming, and I see salary increases coming, and I see more income coming, you know what I think? I don't think that's just a bunch more for me. I think that's another way I can help people in this world and influence them for Christ. I just, in doing that, took away the fact that I go to a prison every day, and I am more and more understanding that this is a platform from which God can launch out his kingdom agenda in the world. And I see other people, I want to help other people, and through this job, I want to invest in other people. That's radical thinking, and very few people are going to go to work tomorrow thinking like that, but it will ensure that you don't waste your work. I pray for a day that people would say, wouldn't it be amazing if people said somewhere along the way in life, man, we just need to hire more Christians. And I'll tell you, there's nothing that would make a pastor happier than for people across Atlanta to say, get anybody applying that got Passion City Church on their resume? Get me more Passion City Church people. They're the best people we've ever had in this organization. That, you see, is a doorway, a platform, if you will, to do the things that really matter most. And then lastly, just close with this one. We ask this question, and everybody's asking this question. Where is my reward? Give me a plaque, certificate, notice me, the buzzword of 2017. Does anybody see me? I'm stuck back here in this cubicle. I show up here every day. Don't seem like I really get much credit. Where is my reward. And God said, I'll tell you where your reward is. Your reward is with me. I hope you all get a promotion. I hope you get a job if you're looking for a job. I hope that you succeed as a homemaker and are incredibly blown away to see your children flung like arrows to the whole world. I hope you succeed in your joint venture this year. I hope one of your new entrepreneurial efforts takes off. I hope the business deals that you've been sweating over for months now comes through. I hope that you see increase in every way of whatever field you're plowing in this world. I really do hope that for you, and I believe God actually hopes that for you. But the only guarantee is that God sees how you work. And he considers it worship when it's done unto him. Louie, I'm a barista, can I be honest? Awesome. You make that latte, soy milk latte. Like you're making it for Jesus. So he rolls in. I'll have a soy milk latte. Tall. And what name? What's the name? Jesus Christ. Well, I've heard that here before, but never on a cup. How do you spell that? J-E-S-U-S-C-H-R-I-S-T. Soy milk latte. 106 degrees. He likes it a special way. And then all of a sudden, how does your day change right then and there? I'm telling you, man, you're wiping off that little thing like you've never wiped it off before. You got a pep in your step. You banged out those grounds and put those other ones in there like you were serving the King of Kings. And when you put it on that counter, it was like, latte for Jesus Christ. Remember me when you come in your kingdom. Louis. You're like, Louis, that would be awesome. I'm actually making the lattes for the devil every day, and it's just a little bit of a different rhythm. At the horns and the pitchfork. What's the name? Beelzebub. Can you spell that? But if you see the work as an offering to God of your best for his best, it's worship. Doesn't matter what you're doing. Whatever you do, go fix a washing machine. Great. Do 8 loads of laundry. Amazing. Run a trading company. Fantastic. Be an IT guy. Great. Awesome. I'm a carpenter. Allowed. Just do it like you're doing it for Jesus. And when you do it like you're doing it for Jesus, you actually then are doing it for Jesus. And if you get a bonus, you go, thank you. Grateful. Glad you noticed. But I already knew that Jesus saw my work as worship, and I'm going to get a reward from him. I'm already getting a reward from him. I just feel satisfied knowing that I didn't just waste 8 hours of my life sitting in this cubicle, but I actually worship God for 8 hours of my life by doing my very best with the intellect he gave me in this role today. Jesus, I came here to do my best for you because I want to have a platform here for you, and I know shoddy work is going to mean that I have a very little opportunity to tell people about you, so I'm going to do real good today in this job. For you and for you. You know, Jesus, can I just talk about Jesus for 1 second? He lived 33 years, short time. He only was public as the Son of God for 3 years, very limited opportunity. And he did the work that he did to free you from sin and shame and death and hell in 3 days. And it says about him in the Gospel of John that he did all these amazing things. But you know what it says at the end of the Gospel of John? It says, if we wrote all the things Jesus did, there wouldn't be enough books in the universe to contain them. That means we don't really hardly know anything Jesus did. What an insignificant life that must have been. Well, we know he walked on water. Yeah, but you don't know what he did the next day or the day after that or the day after that or the day after that. Because if you put all the stories in the Gospels together, you don't get 3 years of 365 days. Most of what Jesus did, he didn't get credit for, and you don't even know about it. But God, his Father, knows about it. And God, his Father, said, this is my Son in whom I am pleased. And then the Son said to the Father, my work, I got work to do. And my work is to do the will of him who sent me. So when you go to work tomorrow and Jesus comes along, don't go, well, I'm going to work and you don't know anything about that. He's going, oh, I know a lot about work. I work my way down from heaven to earth. I work my way to a city called Jerusalem. I work my way into the Passover story. I work my way to a Roman cross. I work my way down into the depths of the earth. I work my way into your sin, your shame, and your sorrow. I work my way into the guilt that was rightly yours. I took that on my life by working to be innocent and faithful for 33 years so that I could die alive and take on the sins that made you dead. Oh, I know about work, all right, because I did my job. I completed my work. I loved it too, and I did it with joy. For the joy set before me, I endured the cross. I didn't hate the cross. I didn't complain about the cross. You never heard me one time murmur about going to my prison called the cross. No, I saw it as a platform. I'm going to die for the sins of the world, change history. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do the work. I'm going to do the work necessary to liberate everybody from sin and shame. And I'm telling you, if he worked like that, then I know he could empower us to be world changers in our jobs. Don't ever say, ever again in life, nobody sees my work. My work is invisible. I'm insignificant. My cubicle's off the beaten path. Nobody even knows I'm here. God knows you're there. God sees your work. God understands your sacrifice, and God is with you in the middle of it, and he is the rewarder of everything you do. You're going to get paychecks for X number of years, but you're going to get a heavenly inheritance from God Almighty, not just from being a good person or trying to honor God in the hidden places. You're going to get a reward from God for being a good employee at your company. Nobody saw that coming. Oh, you get into heaven by grace alone, but when you get there, you get rewarded by the King of Kings. And that King of Kings is going to say to you, all the days you were in that salon, I saw every one of them. You fought for integrity. You cared about people. You were selfless. You did your very best. You shined. You were the most caring person in there. You were above reproach. You were above the fray. You were a healer, a unifier. You were a person who lighted up the character of that place. You didn't just take all the profits, but you actually invested into the world. I'm telling you, man, I saw every bit of it. I saw every balayage and every haircut and every shampoo and every time you swept up somebody's hair off the floor. I saw every bit of it, and you were awesome at it. I want to give you a big fat reward in front of all these people. And then you're going to be about third in line going, oh my goodness, man, I just sat in that cubicle for 10 years of my life and resented every bit of it. And I call it a prison in 50 different ways, and I never really saw this is my platform from which, by the power of God, I can change the world. Nobody knew Katherine Johnson until recently in the last few years. I wonder how many calculations she did that sent rockets into space. And now people go, what a legend. And God said, yeah, I already knew that. And I'm glad you made a movie about her. And Taraji Henson, nice portrayal, touching story. She was already getting all the acclaim coming her way. Faithfulness in the end. Don't waste your work by excelling at what you do with a winsome kingdom spirit.